Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of things. Jim Traber coming up at 9:30. I'm sure he'll have all kinds of thoughts on what happened down in Waco with the Sooners suffering their first loss of the season. We'll talk about college football right before he comes on. Oklahoma did fall flat against Baylor, 27-14. Oklahoma State, on the other hand, looks the part of a team that is peaking and getting better at the right time as their third straight just absolute domination within the Big 12 Conference as they smoked TCU on Saturday night. So a couple of teams that look to be going in opposite directions, just one game in between now and Bedlam on Thanksgiving weekend. High school football playoffs, the Elk City Elks with one of the biggest upsets in the state of Oklahoma, for sure Class 4A, as they go to number 4 Cushing, get a win 21-14, so they're on the road again Friday night, continuing their playoff run at Grove. Grove, one of their guys, the running back Emmanuel Crawford, an unbelievable story that he's got. And if you have time between now and then, go find you either find Friday's copy of the Oklahoman or get online at newsok.com. Cameron Jordan wrote an unbelievable story detailing his life, and it's one of those things that's going to be impossible to root against that guy on Friday night. I can promise you that. But the Elks do upset Cushing. We'll talk that. Clinton rolled Hera, and then Burns Flat, Dill City. Man, there's something about the Eagles and the Mangum Tigers that they just had their number this year. Another dominating win. So the Burns Flat, Dill City Eagles are into the second round of the Class A playoffs as well. That's what we got on mind. Feel free to chime in. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'll talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime on in. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, stay in touch with us a couple of ways. KADSAM.com or the Paragon Communications app. The app has all things with the radio stations. It's got the Penny News. It's got Big Elk TV. It's got Paragon TV. It's got everything there inside the Paragon app. You can also go back and listen to a show you missed via the podcast Skinny on Sports on KADS AM or iTunes. Jared, how are you this morning?
I am well. How are you?
Voice still struggling a little. Haven't quite got all the way back from the excitement and the cold of Friday night.
I think I'm still struggling with a runny nose.
Yeah.
You're going to hear me sniffing a lot. I apologize.
A little stopped up. But, yeah. Man, what a game on Friday over there at Cushing as the Elk City Elks overcome a 4-2 turnover battle loss. They turned it over four times, Cushing twice. But the most important one for Cushing was the live ball turnover at the end when Mason Price makes the interception in the end zone. And the Elks win 21-14 over the number 4 Tigers. Just an incredible night all the way around. It was close. It was hard-fought. It was hard-hitting on both sides. And the Elks were just able to close the door there with about 7 minutes left, put together a nice, long, time-consuming drive. And, you know, Cushing had the passing attack. You know, I never really thought the clock was even an issue. Even with 43 seconds left, being at the Big Elks 20, I never felt like Cushing was ever bothered to start hurrying. They're used to playing that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There was no panic. I don't think the clock really made much of a difference in decision making or anything like that. But the one thing that the Elks did do was kind of make at least enough pressure to know that's the last time you're going to have the ball because you can't stop our run game the way Elk City just ran it right down the field and scored the touchdown right before the pick by Mason.
Yeah, they didn't seem – because you're right, that was how their offense worked. So it never really felt like a hurry up. And, man, not often can you say you lose a turnover battle and you come out with a win, especially on the road against a top five opponent. What were they, fourth time?
Yeah.
And that's just such a gutsy win by the Big Elks, and that just shows you in the playoffs anything can happen. And how that win can propel them the next week, only time will tell. But you got to know, they don't care where the game's at, how far away it is. They're going to go into that game next week thinking, man, we can do it. We did it last Friday. We can do it this Friday. We could be the upset guys and make a run here. And oddly enough, I know you've seen a little bit more Grove film than I have. I was more worried about Cushing's passing attack and defending it. Grove is more run-oriented, so oddly, and you know, we'll really break this down as the week goes on, but I feel a little bit more confident about this week than last week because of our run defense.
Yeah.
how we shut down there. Cushing wasn't built around the run. That's clear. But I just like our guys up front. They played a great game and Costley had their quarterback scrambling all over the place. So if we can, you know, push Grove into doing stuff they don't want to do, that's probably throw the ball. Again, haven't seen a lot of film on it. It's just Monday. I will. But I think that gives us a great shot. And again, I don't care where the game's played. I like our chances.
Yeah, I think that's it's going to be a completely different challenge for sure. You know, Berlewitz, the quarterback, was fantastic. The Elks held him down in the first half, only 67 yards at halftime on 5 of 12. Let's see, he ended up, 16 of 27 for 274, two touchdowns and a pick. I thought the Elks, outside of the couple of plays that got loose from Crooks, did a fantastic job tackling in the secondary, not giving up a bunch of yards after catch to Cushing. And that was kind of a staple of their offense, was to get guys in space and let the athletes make plays. And the Elks did a phenomenal job of limiting that. Like I said, there was three that got loose. The first half screen to Yaunt, which, you know, Mason Price ends up, one of the penalties the Elks got, and there wasn't a ton of them, was a very important one, saving a touchdown. Then the Elks defense stopped them in the red zone on fourth down. But then Crooks got loose for a 47 and 66, where the Elks had a shot at him at one point. He made a guy miss, and then there it went. It was out the gate to the house. But that didn't happen very often, and that's a big reason, I think, why the Elks were able to win. It'll be the same idea this week, except for the ball is going to be handed to Emmanuel Crawford, or, you know, kind of thrown to him as Grove's running back. He's phenomenal. As yes. good of running back, I think, as the Elks will see this season. He's one of those types of guys. I know watching back the Miami game, which was the regular season finale, he came into that one with 29 touchdowns, and I don't know how many he scored in that game. I do know he had, four on Friday night, and Grove's comeback win over Fort Gibson. Listen, they were down 35-21 heading into the fourth quarter and were able to come all the way back and win that game 42-35. So, you know, high-scoring offense for sure over there at Grove. You look at the point totals. Lowest scoring, lowest output all season was 20 against Wagner. Next, 34. Everything else is in the 40s and 50s. You know, it was just they've scored a ton of points. So it'll be interesting to see what the Elks can do defensively to stop Grove. But I'm like you. I felt like the matchup this week is better one for Elk City with their style of play than what it was last week, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and if there's – in you know, okay, listen, I know the road trip, I say it with confidence, but it is a thing. I mean, but these guys are they're used to long road trips, right? I mean, we should be. We've been – and I did the math, by the way. I need to get with you how many miles that after this Grove trip we'll have traveled. But, you know, going to Guymon, I know Guymon's not on the same level as Grove, but – travel is always a thing that's in the back of your mind. Those are long bus rides, and so that's a thing. You got to think that they're going to leave early enough to get the blood flowing back in their legs once they get there and everything. Didn't appear to be a problem last Friday. I don't think it will be this Friday. And the matchups, though, excite me. The matchups, the X's and O's on the field, it excites me for this week and their chances.
Just give you a little preview. If you go back, like I mentioned earlier, Emmanuel Crawford is the running back for Grove. He's it's just a hell of a story.
It is.
It was in the Oklahoman on Friday. Cameron Jordan wrote the piece on him. Listen, this kid was sold into slavery by his parents at the age of 3 in Ghana.
Good.
He
night.
Did that for he was there working in the fishing trade on Lake Volta in Ghana as a slave, and a family that was there saw him, kind of took him in, and then who are his parents now, there in Grove, knew these people, met him, and he actually said, I guess the first time he met his mother now, he crawled up in her lap and was like, this is the first time I felt like I actually had a home.
Wow.
You know, first meeting. So it's an awesome story. If you can go back, read that on Friday, Emmanuel Crawford, the running back from Grove. Just an unbelievable story for him to be where he's at in the just the it's nuts. And so, like I said, it's going to be impossible to root against that guy. But
it's
one of those deals. Have him have some yards, but the Elks win the game, and we'll all be happy and move on to a date with maybe Clinton in the semifinals. Speaking of the Red Tornadoes. Started slow, and it was scoreless after the first quarter, but then Clinton turned it on like Clinton does, and they blow out Hera to move into the second round of the playoffs. You know, the Red Tornadoes just kind of keep on rolling like they have been here at the end of the season. It is the first time they've given up points since all the way back to the Elgin game. They'd been on a streak of three straight shutouts.
What's wrong with Clinton?
With Weatherford, Elk City, and Bethany. But Red Tornadoes win 41-14. They get Bristow next. It's Bristow. The Pirates just absolutely put a pop knot on Broken Bow's head, 55-6. So Bristow comes out to the Tornado Bowl here for the second round on Friday.
I didn't watch much of that. I usually this weekend to my advantage by getting a lot of rest, so I didn't really see much of it. But, yeah, I saw slow – you know, you see slow start, and then all of a sudden you see 20 points.
Yeah.
That's what Clinton can do.
Birds Flat, Dill City. Man, did they have – they had Mangum's number this season. We talked about on Friday, talked to Coach Schneeberger of Birds Flat. You know, he was impressed with the way they played hard, Mangum and fast and that sort of thing. But – there was something about that matchup that favored his team, because when you go back and look at Mangum's season, they allowed over 20 points three times, 36 to Merritt, and over 50 to Burns Flat both times, 56 in the regular season, 50 the other night in the playoffs. The Eagles went 50-34, so they continue their season on with a trip to Elmore City Purnell coming up on Friday. But, you know, we talked to Coach Schneeberger on Friday before the game. He seemed not cocky by any stretch, but, you know, he believed, and he thought his players believed in what they could do and what they've been doing. And sure enough, it came to fruition after a close first half. I think, what was it, 28-22 maybe at halftime? It was something like it was a one score game at halftime.
Yeah.
That then Burns Flat blew it open in the second half to win.
Yeah, no doubt. I really had no doubt in that one. I had, based on the history of that matchup, they've had their number, and you know, after talking to Coach Schneeberger, it's why coaches typically, after they are done coaching, they go into politics, because they can sway you, you know. And after talking to him, he felt his confidence, and he felt like he had a lot of confidence in those guys. I like to see them go on a deep run here. This next game might be, you know, tougher. Obviously, each one will be in as the playoffs go on, but you'd like to see them go on a deep run, see, you know, really test them, see how they test against other stronger opponents.
Let's see. I know that Elk City and Clinton both are going to be at 7 o'clock. Those game times have been moved back 30 minutes from the initial one of 7:30. So the Clinton Bristow.
We can maybe get that around 4 o'clock.
That'd be nice. We can leave early enough. Don't see that for Burns Flat Dill City yet. So it looks like maybe there's still a 7:30 kick at Elmore City Purnell, at least for right now, from what I can see in the Oklahoma. And they do a pretty good job of updating those on a daily basis once they get the time switched. We'll update you if that's wrong. And if it's wrong, somebody text us, 225-9698. We'll get that out there. But for right now, it looks like the Elks and Clinton both play at 7, Burns Flat Dill City at 7:30. On Friday night in the second round of the Oklahoma High School football playoffs. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. And we'll talk the matchups throughout the week. We got plenty of time. Look around the state. Kind of give you an idea of where things are at. But now we got to talk Lincoln Riley and Texas Tech East. Oklahoma. We'll be back. Jim Traber coming up in the next segment. Whoa, my phone blowing up. Now, listen, this guy did offer OSU or OU in points a long time ago.
Sorry?
And now it's back on the table for Bedlam. This guy offered me OU in points a long time ago.
Okay.
And now he's chomping at the bit for me to take it. I didn't back then. We'll see now.
Well, I'm not going to get to Bedlam until we get to Bedlam.
Why?
But the only thing I'll say about that is it's hard to pick against OU until OSU consistently wins.
Yeah, that's fine.
How many times has OU gone in that game looking like the huge underdog?
You can fall into that trap if you want to.
I'm
because that's literally the only reason why you'd pick OU at this point.
At this point,
that's the only reason why you'd do it is history because the two
and
teams
the guy we're going to have on here in about 6 minutes will say the same thing.
Completely. He will. But that's the only reason.
Yeah.
Because they look completely different.
Yeah.
When you watch the two teams play. Oklahoma went down to Baylor. It's fascinating to me how, you know, it almost feel like, I mean, because let's be honest, one of the biggest criticisms of Lincoln Riley in losses and even some of the wins throughout his time as not only just the play caller at OU, but then also the head coach, is that he does not trust and stick with the run game. And it's bared out when you watch, when you see go back and look at the final results. I mean, the Georgia game sticks out like a sore thumb. Rodney Anderson running up and down the field in the first half. And then in the second half, anytime he gets close, his natural reaction is to throw the ball. And I think that's just his philosophy of football that he learned from Mike Leach. That's just the Texas Tech way, is to throw it when you don't know what to do, right?
Right.
Instead of just, you know, running it. And I think that starts out as a certain philosophy, and it bleeds into permeating the entire program. And what does it feel like teams that throw it are than teams that run it? Softer. And there's no doubt that when you look at this program, Oklahoma, and this started under Bob Stoops. It's not just a Lincoln Riley thing. This started under Bob Stoops, but they have progressively gotten softer over the last decade. And the only reason why something major didn't get overhauled already is because of the extremely ridiculous level of quarterback play that mask the problems that have been in the program since 2014, the softness of the defense since all the way back then. Now, sure, they've had a peak here and there where defense was okay. 2015, it was okay. Last year, it was okay. But for the most part, the defense has been soft as Charmin, and so has the offense. Now, OU with Riley actually kind of ran the ball, but he doesn't. It's like he's biting his tongue to run the football because he doesn't want to. That's not what he loves to do, right?
Right.
He kind of does it just because he doesn't want to look like an idiot when they lose. But as soon as the game is tied, it's throw, 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 throw. And that's what happened. I can't believe he put Spencer Rattler in the game. It was unbelievable. The panic that move showed his team was off the charts. And don't tell me Caleb Williams' hand was hurt because he came back in a meaningless drive at the end of the game.
Right.
So it wasn't that, and he said he was trying to get a spark. I mean, poor Spencer Rattler. That dude doesn't even look like a D2 quarterback at the moment.
Yeah.
With just the lack of confidence that he has about him, not only with his play this year, but then also with the benching. I mean, that was like a Hail Mary at 17-7. It's a two-score. I mean, it's a 10-point game. And Riley was throwing up Hail Marys.
Right.
It was brutal. But I think the overarching, you know, you could see it coming, right? And every game this year, you could kind of see this, a performance like this coming and coming back to bite the Sooners, and they're going to lose. The problem is now, okay, and I'm not talking about to finish the season. I mean, because the truth of it is, all that Oklahoma State for that matter, need to almost guarantee a spot in the playoff is for Alabama to lose and Oregon to lose. At that point, a one-loss Big 12 champ is in the playoff, no questions asked, and you might get an argument that they'll jump Oregon. If we're really being honest, I mean, that's just the truth. Once the entire story is written, then you'll be able to look at those two resumes and you'll see, you know, the differences. But at the end of the day, even doing that still masks the overarching issue with Oklahoma, and that is the program is soft, and Lincoln Riley is the head man of that. I mean, I make the joke about Texas Tech East. The difference is he gets better players at OU.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Outside, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
he gets better players otherworldly quarterback.
That's the brand factor. I mean,
sure it is.
That's the brand factor.
But otherworldly quarterback play has covered up these problems for years now.
Yeah, I don't know if that along with the society we live in, and I hate to blame society, but
OSU's not soft.
No, I know. Yeah,
Alabama's not soft. Georgia's damn sure not soft.
So scared to lose them in the transfer portal. So scared to hurt kids' feelings, and my conversations after the game were he's too much. Lincoln is too much of a player's coach, and not afraid. You know, trying to be their buddies, and hey, if I get them to be my friends, they'll perform for me. He's got to nip that in the bud immediately.
Think about this.
It's something he's got to learn as a young coach. You can't be their friends all the time, even when they screw up. You've got to be a coach. You got to be that head man that they fear and that they want to run through a brick wall for. And right now, that's where the softness, I think, is starting from, is just being a player's coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's akin to the cool parent that's their kid's buddy instead of their kid's parent.
Yeah,
that's what
the
he looks
party,
like.
So, hey, you guys stay at my house, and that way, like that parent would. You know what I mean? Yeah, I see. Exactly. Being that cool parent. He needs to be that forgive my language, that hard A. That's what he's got to do. And I also question, and what was disgusting to me was, or more frightening, I guess, this was off a bye week. How are you that unprepared offensively after 2 weeks of being prepared, I mean, off a bye week, I'm actually okay with the defense's performance, too, because they did everything
decent.
They could until waiting, and I'm just like, okay, they're doing everything they possibly can to allow this offense to come alive whenever that may be. And to really, and it never happened. You get one meaningful touchdown, and that's it. I was okay with the defense's performance, which I said going in I thought might be better because of the health, and I think we saw a little bit of that. But the offense, how are you that unprepared after a bye week?
But that
on me, that's where I was. So I was like, what were we doing for 2 weeks?
You know what's sad though, is I don't disagree. I thought Oklahoma's defense played one of its better games, and they gave up 300 yards rushing.
Sure.
But every time they need a stop, they never get it. OU scores 7-0. What does Baylor do? Boom, right back down the field.
Down. Yeah.
And then you start the third quarter. All right, get a three and out, build something, get some field position for they give up a field goal. They never get the stop when it really matters through the flow of the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been some fool's gold at the end of games with Tulane and with Nebraska and some of those times where they did step up and get a stop. But here's another problem, and this has been happening for all season long. Al Eschbeck has been screaming. If you could understand him, you would be able to tell what he's saying, right? But it's 10-7. Oklahoma punts it down inside Baylor's 20. What was there? They're at the 14 or whatever. And you look up, Brian Asamoah had the best game he's ever played. He's not in there. For some reason, it's time to play the second string linebackers, and what happens? Smith goes 75. They run it right down the field and score a touchdown. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? They don't need a break. It's a 3-point game, and you can stop Baylor inside their own 20 and force them to punt, and you've got the second string defense out there, and they just run right down the field because a linebacker was out of position. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Asamoah had been everywhere. And he's not on the field, and the most important defensive possession of the game, as it turned out. Because once it was a 10-point game, two scores, Riley was changing quarterbacks to put Rattler back in. Unbelievable. It was just crazy. But
yeah.
The overarching problems with Oklahoma coming out of that game is this. 296 to 78. That's the rushing yards between the two teams. And that goes back to physicality. It goes back to soft. And
yes.
Lincoln Riley is soft. And he's been bailed out because he had three straight Heisman top two finishes who were all playing in the pros to a varying degree of success. Joining us now is the voice you'll hear at 2 o'clock this afternoon. It's the Ultimate Jim Traber. Jim, how are you?
I'm good, fellas. How's everything out there in western Oklahoma?
Oh, it's doing good. It was a gorgeous day yesterday. It's going to be 80 degrees tomorrow. Probably windy if it's going to be that hot. But it's been really nice, and the Big Elks got a win on Friday night, an upset in the playoffs. So now we get to travel to Grove on Friday. So we'll have to leave.
Oh, my gosh. Now that is a long way there.
We'll have to leave about noon on Thursday so that we can get there for the 7 o'clock game on Friday.
Somebody put it out there. We are the longest road trip.
Oh, had to be.
In the state, regardless of class. We are the longest road trip.
Now, so. I will say this. I think that I remember, like, Diamond had to go to Broken Bow or something like that one time. And that is literally, I mean, that's like 10 hours or something. So, but, yeah, boy, you going to Grove, that's impressive now.
Yeah.
Well, good for the Elks.
It is. It's
When's
good.
The last time they had won a playoff game?
2006.
Wow. Who's the coach out there?
It is Dave Meadows. He is an older gentleman who's actually already in the Coaching Hall of Fame. He made his start over at Clinton back in the 70s and 80s, won three state championships there, went to Garden City, Kansas, had success. He's been at, like, DeSoto, Texas. I mean, everybody knows that. He coached Von Miller in high school, as a matter of fact. So he's kind of a legend, a living legend, that came back 2 years ago after the Elks had lost 20 straight, two straight losing, like literally defeated seasons. He lived here, and he, you know, kind of had a plan. To get this thing turned around, and that's exactly what's happened.
Well, good, man. That's good to hear. I know the people out there, high school football is so big in towns. Like, that's really cool. So
yes, it is.
Is Grove any good?
Man, if you get a chance, find Friday's Oklahoman. There's a story in there by Cameron Jordan about Grove's running back, Emmanuel Crawford. He was sold into slavery by his own parents at 3 years old over in Ghana. And he got out of there, and now he's at Grove, and he's scored upwards of 30-something touchdowns this year. I think
Wow.
He's a junior. It's an incredible story about how he's been able to, you know, his life has turned into where he's at now. So it's going to be – it's one of those things like Jared and I were talking about. I hope he has 200 yards and three touchdowns and loses by a point so the Elks
Yeah.
can move on.
That's awesome. Good for the Elks.
Yes. Yes, it is. The town is buzzing for sure. Hey, you know where's not buzzing? Is Norman, Oklahoma, right about now. Oklahoma goes down, gets outrushed 296-78, and they lose to Baylor 27-14. There's tons of different ways we can approach this. Give us your overall thought about what happened down in Waco on Saturday.
Why are we surprised? That's my number one thing. Why are we surprised? You know, here's the deal. Oklahoma's football program is so good and such at a high level that all year long, everybody, including me, And I'm not going to get duped into this anymore. I was thinking, oh, well, next week is going to be the week. Okay, well, next week is, oh, they got people injured and blah, blah, blah. Fellas, they're not a great football team. And I don't care. I'm not talking about who they have on their team and how many stars behind their name there was. They're not a great football team. They're not. They can't tackle. They're a terrible tackling team. They're not tough. Baylor just stuck it right in their face on both sides of the ball. They're not a great football team, and I think we got sucked in by the fact that they were 9-0, and they beat a bunch of bad teams. This league isn't any good. Isn't it interesting to watch what OSU is doing to teams that what OU struggled with? I mean, have you thought about that?
Yes.
You know, they struggle with Kansas and they obliterate Kansas. They struggle with TCU and OSU just, I mean, throttles them. West Virginia, downright down a wire, kills them. I'm gonna do a whole part on this when I get on the air today. But for the first time since maybe 2014, probably definitely 2011, I'm gonna come on the air today. I'm gonna tell you guys, OSU's better than OU.
Mm-hmm.
They are. Now, does that mean they're gonna beat them? No, it doesn't, because it's all gonna depend on Mike Gundy and his coaching staff. Because now this defense might be good enough to just kind of play it close to the vest. I doubt it, because you know who will not play that game close to the vest? Lincoln Riley. You can mark it down. When Lincoln Riley's back is against the wall, what have we seen every single year? They lose early, and the next thing you know, they're done. No, they're not. They keep on winning. So I will bet you that they'll come. Now they could lose to Iowa State this coming Saturday. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But, yeah, I mean, they got problems, fellas. They do. I don't know what it is. I'm not down there. All these dudes that are supposed to be NFL players and big-time dudes. I mean, I'm watching the defense that they're running all over. I mean, just running all over them. And then some dude makes a hit, and what do? They stand up, and they're all, you know, they got to show off and everything. I mean, this team is not the team that we thought it was going to be. And, frankly, I would hope that they feel the same way about it. I really do. I would hope that they would feel the same way about it. Somebody sent me a message on my Instagram at Jim Traver if anybody wants to jump in, and sent me the starting lineups for both sides of the ball for both Baylor and OU, and it went by stars, right? Yeah. 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. You can't believe the difference. I mean, Baylor's are all 2, 3, some fours. OU is 4, 4, 5, 4, 4, 4. I mean, I don't care about stars anymore. That's why when I keep hearing, well, they just got this kid and they just got this kid, I don't care. I want to see these dudes play. When are we going to go on the radio and say the same things about OU's defense that we're saying right now about OSU's defense? Are we ever going to do that? Are we ever going to come on and go, wow, man, they'll hit you in the mouth and they're really, really good? Do you think we'll ever say that about OU? I don't know. I'm going to tell you. OU is soft, fellas. Yep. That's what they are. They're soft. And I don't know if it's because you guys know I'm the old dude, you know, get off my lawn, and people like to make fun of me and everything. But I think all this crap about Lincoln Riley being their friend and all this other stuff, I think they're a bunch of soft people. I really do. I think that they need to figure out how to hit somebody. By the way, did you see Baylor hitting them? Baylor was lighting them up. It's almost like they didn't know what to do. They were getting hit so daggone hard. So just an embarrassing loss. I was not surprised by it. I didn't pick OU, but I like Baylor plus the points. Why wouldn't you? I mean, who is OU going to blow out? I don't know if they're ever going to beat anybody like that. So we'll see. I got to tell you, it's interesting now, boy. If OSU beats OU, OU won't even go to the Big 12 championship game. I mean, if Baylor wins out, so, and by the way, you got no idea whether Baylor's going to win out, right? I mean, this whole thing is so psychotic, losing to bad teams, beating good teams. I will tell you there was one thing I was dead right on last week, and that was that Baylor definitely was looking forward.
Yes.
When they lost the weekend before. They thought, hey, we beat OU, we're in. You know, well, that they go down there and lose, and then they come back and look great. So really – really a lot of things to talk about, but a really, really bad loss for OU.
Yeah, we mentioned exactly the same thing you just said about, you know, the players coach and being their friend. I mean, he's like the cool parent that all, you know, lets, you know, the parties happen at his house and never has any responsibility. And the word soft, we've used it 10 times already. And the truth to me is this program has been soft for a while now. You talk about the defense, how long has it been since they'll hit you in the mouth? You know, there's been some upticks, maybe last year, maybe in 2015. But overall, the overarching kind of theme of Oklahoma football over almost the past decade has been soft. And the only reason why Lincoln Riley's teams have been able to cover some of it up was otherworldly quarterback play from Baker, from Kyler, and quite frankly, Jalen Hurts as well. You look at those guys, I mean, listen, they're starting in the NFL. Now, the success they're having is what it is, but on the college level, it's very rare you get a run of three straight guys like that, and I think it masks the problems of the team because they were able to outscore teams with that phenomenal quarterback play.
I mean, I think that's well said. I really do. I think that, I mean, you know, again, people, there's a lot of people that listen to me on the radio and think that I say things that are just stupid. You know, and they don't understand why does it matter? Why would that matter? And one of them, if you guys remember, the whole Buki stuff, right? Yeah. About how he could do whatever he wanted to do. Guess what? It is time for this coaching staff to say, if you're going to do stuff like that, you're going to sit on the bench. They have got to figure out some discipline. I mean, they get stupid penalties. You know that I was listening, you know, I was watching the OSU game on the plane home on Saturday night. And then I taped it and watched the rest. And there was a point where OSU had a penalty. I think it was like in the fourth quarter. And the person calling the game said, that's their first penalty of the game. I was like, what? They didn't have a penalty for three quarters? Meanwhile, you know, OU is getting all these stupid penalties. How many penalties have we seen from offensive and defensive linemen where they're hitting the guy after the play or they're doing something like that? You know, I mean, it's just, I'm sorry, they're not very disciplined, and they're not very tough, and you're not going to win championships. Listen, I'll tell you this, guys. I know that OU fans are going to get mad at me about this, but it's probably a good – first of all, they don't belong. If they run the table, they don't belong in this thing. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but If they were to run the table, they do not belong in the Final Four. But if for some reason they were to get in, they're going to get their lunch. Do you know what Georgia's going to do to them, fellas?
Mm-hmm.
If they were to play Georgia, let's say they sneak in and they're the 4 seed, Georgia will pummel them. I mean, that offensive line, they won't be able to – it will be ugly. I mean, so I don't know if – I guess you always want to get to the highest level that you can get to. But, wow, man, that is – that was an ugly, ugly game down there. Just ugly.
Well, the consolation prize is that Texas lost to Kansas in overtime. You talk about ugly in a program going in a complete – what's going on down there? Is Sarkisian, is he the guy? I know it's way too early to say that, but, I mean,
No. I said it on TV. I'll say it again. I got to tell you something. If I'm one of those big, rich, like Jake Jamil or however you say his name, I'm buying this dude out. I'm getting rid of him. They're embarrassing. I mean, 5 games in a row, losing to Kansas. They're a joke. They may not even make a bowl game. So sometimes you make a mistake and you got to go, okay, I did it. And listen, those guys, Jake Jamil, I think that's his name. If he pays, I think it's $30 million or something, pay him off and say, see you later. This is not the answer. I mean, I'm being serious here, guys. He is, they're terrible. Now, they're not going to do that, but they're terrible. They're an absolute joke. And frankly, this league isn't very good. Oklahoma State is really, really good and great defensively. And then I think that OU and Baylor, and I mean, they're okay, but I don't know. I will say this. OSU's better than OU, but I'm not picking OSU. I will tell you that.
That's exactly what I said. Until they can consistently beat OU, it's hard to pick against them, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see if they can do it, but I don't know, man. It's look, did you see the line? OU's given 4.5 to Iowa State. Vegas hates OU. They do. Vegas, the lines that they're setting on OU, they're telling us that OU's not any good.
Yep.
But we just sit here because they have a great, great program, and they're supposed to be good, and we hear this and we hear that. Sometimes we got to just say to ourselves, okay, I'm watching it with my own eyes. They barely beat Tulane. They barely beat Nebraska. They barely beat West Virginia. They barely beat Kansas. I mean, it's time for us to say this team is massively overrated. And I'll tell you what, I think they'll fall like a rock tomorrow night. Because I said this when it first came out. I said, this committee is waiting for them to lose. They're telling everybody, we don't think OU is good. We're waiting for them to lose. And now that they lost to Baylor, well, they should drop below Baylor, right?
Yeah.
They should drop below OSU. I think OU will drop to probably about 13 would be my guess.
Yeah, that'd be right there in the same kind of realm as what they were in the two polls, right? 12, I think, in both polls. OSU, you mentioned them. Holy cow, just destroying people over the last couple of weeks. I wrote it down. I actually sent one of my buddies and I were texting on Saturday night. Through three quarters, or it might have even been early fourth quarter, TCU had 174 yards. The week before, West Virginia had 133 the whole game, and then Kansas didn't get a first down until the third quarter. And he was like, yeah, I know, and it's so hard for me to believe it because I'm a Poke fan and I have been all my entire life. I don't trust it yet. I think it's time that we can go ahead and trust that OSU's defense is fantastic.
Well, they're the second-best defense in the country. I mean, there's no doubt. Everybody talk about Texas A&M and Wisconsin. No. This is the second-best defense in the country. Georgia is in a class that's absurd. And then I think OSU's second. And if Spencer Sanders doesn't do anything stupid, then they got a chance to play with people. But I will say this, 11 straight quarters they didn't give up a touchdown. And they only give up touchdowns when they were up by 40.
Right.
Or 40, 46 or whatever. So they're amazing. They really are. And now I will say this, this Tech game coming up is a really, really big minefield. I mean, they better be ready to play. They better have some focus because this is exactly what Baylor did before they played OU. So they better go down there. Tech is fired up. They're trying to get into a bowl game. So, and the good thing is defense travels. So I'm not saying they're going to lose. I'm just saying that they better be prepared to play.
Hey, shifting our focus real quick, Jim, to the NFL. Looks like our Dallas Cowboys are back on track. Impressive win against the Falcons. Thoughts on that one? Thoughts on the rest of the league yesterday?
Well, they showed, the Dallas Cowboys showed that last week was an anomaly, which, by the way, there's anomalies all the time in the NFL. I mean, look at Tampa Bay getting beat by Washington, right? I mean, it happens all the time. I think the Dallas Cowboys are good. I don't think they're the best team in the NFC, but I think they're good. If your squad could win one playoff game, then you guys should, like, celebrate for a long time because it hadn't happened in a while. But anyway, they're good. A lot of other crazy things. It looks like Kansas City might be getting their act back together again, which is scary, I'm sure, for the rest of the AFC. My Steelers with a thorough embarrassing tie. Mason Rudolph, man, he's a great kid, but I don't understand why they didn't give the Haskins kid a chance. I just don't understand. They must think he stinks, right? I mean, they must, because Mason Rudolph is not the future quarterback, and they need a future quarterback. And you'd think that would have been a good opportunity to fire Haskins. They're the worst team in the league, and they still didn't do it. So I don't know. But the Steelers, it's better to tie than lose, I guess, right? Better to tie than lose. I will say this, though. What a tremendous performance by Baker Mayfield and the Browns. I mean, just a wonderful, wonderful performance by them. And I gotta tell you something, fellas. Forget about how I feel about Baker Mayfield. All right, forget that. Let's throw it out the window. If I'm the Browns, I seriously consider not having him be my long-term quarterback. I'm serious. You want an unbelievable stat? Listen to this. When the Cleveland Browns have been outrushed by 50 or more yards, okay? So you got what I'm saying. When the other team has rushed for 50 or more yards and Baker Mayfield's been the quarterback, they're 0-14. 0-14. Now, if that doesn't say what Baker Mayfield is all about, then I don't know what does. And I'm not blaming the whole loss on him. Their defense got obliterated by a rookie quarterback. But what they did to Baker Mayfield yesterday was just embarrassing. And that offense, and luckily for him, he got hurt so he could get the heck out of there. But the Browns are the Browns. I mean, they just are. Isn't it interesting that the Browns and the Bengals are on the bottom right now, and the Steelers and the Ravens are at the top? I mean, seriously. All I heard was the Steelers are terrible. Well, they're not very good. Somehow they're 5-3-1. Look out for the Browns. Oh, yeah, they're at the bottom. All the Bengals, they beat the Steelers. They're really good. They're down there at the bottom, too. So it usually happens that way. A lot of other interesting things. In the NFL, I thought that I'm interested to see the Rams tonight. My pick. I mean, I don't know. This Odell Beckham thing does not make me happy, but I guess it's a good thing with Brooks going down that helps him. And like I said, Kansas City looked good. Looks like they're getting back on track. I can't wait to see a Kansas City Buffalo game in the playoffs. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah, and another team that defensively has just gone to a level that I don't know if anybody knew they were was Green Bay. My gosh, the last few weeks, going up against Kyler Murray, Pat Mahomes, Russell Wilson this last week, they have been phenomenal in shutting out Seattle yesterday. And that's got to, you know, with everything that was going on up there, the one thing that's been constant is the Green Bay defense has been great so far this year.
Oh, I know. I mean, if they can get their offense doing what it can do, they keep playing defense like that, they could very well be a Super Bowl team. And I don't know what's going on with Tampa Bay. I guess you can blame it on their defensive backs being out. Although I did, by the way, speaking of that, I did see Woody Washington on the field on Saturday, right? Woody number zero.
Yeah, he was
and
out there.
I just thought when Woody Washington started and played that suddenly that the defense was going to be great again.
Well,
I know that they got pummeled.
That'll be the excuse. He didn't start. He came in. So
okay. Good.
That's still out there.
Yeah. I will say this, the one thing they did do good was they played really good red zone defense. That was it. But then the rest of the way, until they got tired or beat up, Baylor. And let me say one last thing about the field goal at the end.
Mm-hmm.
If OU would have done that, everybody around here would have been fine with it, okay? Get rid of this stupid point differential crap that they do, and you won't have to do something like that. Did I like it? There's a possibility they could have made it. You know how many points they beat OSU beat them by?
10.
10. Yeah. So if they get into some kind of tie situation, which is going to be really hard now, but that 3 points could help them. So I think it's funny. And here's the last thing I'll say to the OU fans out there. If that's what you got out of that game, OU's got even bigger problems than we thought. If that's the thing that you brought out of that game about them kicking that field goal at the end of the game, then you are living in a total fantasy land.
What do you think as far as OSU's chances? All we've talked about is OU's because they've been undefeated. But now the way that Oklahoma State's playing, I mean, the eye test is going to be their biggest friend that there is. Their loss is kind of wishy-washy, but it's clear that they don't care about losses. It's all about quality wins. You know, the Baylor looks better, OU maybe not as much, but with the history of that rivalry, being able to beat OU once, maybe twice, depending on what else happens, what kind of chances do you give Oklahoma State realistically at sneaking into that top four and then being in the college football playoff if they were able to win out?
Baylor beating OU did not help OSU. I know that OSU fans are going, well, but they beat Baylor. That doesn't matter. It's OU, the University of Oklahoma. That is the powerhouse in this league. If you could beat them when they're undefeated and then beat them with one loss, that's going to give you a lot more power than beating them and then beating Baylor in the championship game. It just is. I think if OSU's in the championship against Baylor, I think they're going to be in trouble. Unless crazy things happen all over the country. But, you know, the winner of the Big Ten's going to get in. Obviously, Georgia's getting in. Maybe Alabama's getting in. You know, and then I think if Oregon runs the table, they still got that great win against, they have to beat Utah twice. And they got that great win against Ohio State. So, I mean, it'll be an uphill battle, but they could get in. I will tell you this, though. The one difference between OSU and OU is that OSU will not get embarrassed against one of these great teams. I mean, they won't. That defense will make sure that they do not get embarrassed. Could they lose? Sure they could. This is what I'll tell you. If OSU played Georgia, I think the final score of that game would be 17-3.
Yeah.
If OU plays Georgia, I think the final score will be 28-3. That's probably the difference. So OSU, I'm telling you, they got a great chance, man. I just wonder if Mike Gundy is going to, if he's going to say, even though, because listen, the way they play right now is play great defense, don't do anything stupid. They're not going to beat OU that way. They're not. I'm just telling you. They'll have some things for OSU. They'll score some points. They'll be fired up. OSU can't go into that game saying, oh, well, look at this, man. This is the way we're doing it, so we'll just keep doing it that way. If they do, they're going to lose, if you ask me.
All right, Jim, man, thanks for joining us. Can't wait to hear about your trip out to Phoenix when you're on the air later, and more of your thoughts on what happened over the weekend as well. Thanks for joining us, man.
And by the way, our next podcast coming up today, too, at the Julie and Jim Traver podcast, talks about our trip, and I did something really, really stupid. Imagine that. and you'll have to listen to it on the podcast because Julie couldn't stop. She had to redo her makeup. She was laughing at me so hard.
We got caught up at the end of last week. Just the last Diamondback one was so interesting to me with everything that went on going into that season, and then of course 9/11 and you being there for those three games in New York City, which was maybe the three best games in a row ever in a World Series. It was just really fascinating to listen to how everything reacted. And maybe even the part that I enjoyed was Luis Gonzalez on the way back going, we're still going to win. Like just the confidence in that was pretty cool to me.
I know it, man. It was unbelievable because they were down and the team was down. And Gonzo was just like, sit down. And sat down and drank a beer with him. He goes, we're going to win. We're going to win back at a plane. So I talked to him, by the way. What a great dude he is. He's the best. And it was just a wonderful event. And if you go to my Instagram, you can see that we have Jesse McGuire. He's the guy that played the trumpet and did the national anthem, and he came back. And then we also, listen to this, guys, they also had the guy who flew the stealth bomber over the stadium. Uh-huh. They had him at the reunion this weekend, too. So, but you can hear all that on our podcast, the Julie and Jim Traver podcast. So good stuff.
2 o'clock today, it'll be released, and then 2 o'clock today, we'll hear your thoughts right here on these airwaves. Thanks, man.
Jared, you haven't listened to any of them yet. Jared, you're way behind.
I'm way behind. I'm listening, but I'm behind. So, I'll get caught up. I'll get caught up by next Monday. I promise you that.
Because what you told me, is that you have so much work to do, right?
Yes. Hey, okay. These Big Elks keep winning. I keep staying busy with that stuff, and then basketball started, and of course my other day-to-day stuff. By the way, we'll save you a seat to Grove if you want to go.
Yeah, you want to jump in and do your show, and we'll pick you up from right out in front of the Lucky Star and head that way.
No. You guys go ahead. Enjoy yourself up there.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
All right, fellas. See you guys.
See you later. Head to the Ultimate Jim Traber. Good stuff. I can't wait to hear about the trip.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Out to the Diamondbacks reunion.
Yeah,
and here's the deal. I don't think anything he said. You know, I'm sure people are going to call in and get mad. Actually, you know what? I don't know if OU fans will. And here's why. I don't think this surprised anybody.
No,
the loss to Baylor. I think you saw it coming. Everyone has seen it coming. Since probably the Nebraska game, because you can kind of make, okay, the Tulane week was weird, thought they were going there, the hurricane, it ended up here, da-da-da. But once the Nebraska game happened the way it happened, and then you followed up with West Virginia, the same sloppy look to it, you sort of convinced yourself with Caleb Williams, but I don't know how much it was real. It was, you know what I mean? You kind of still saw this coming.
Yeah.
And
there was hope after Tech. After Texas Tech, thinking, okay, well, maybe that's the product we've been looking for. Maybe that will stick, but it didn't.
But the Kansas game is still in your mind, though,
right,
with Williams. You know, the two incredible performances against Texas and TCU, then Kansas happens. Then you're like, okay, this still is kind of the same team with a different quarterback. We didn't really ask him about changing quarterbacks. I'm sure he'll hit on that.
Oh, sure.
But just to see what his opinion was as far as that change in the middle of the game. But anyhow. Crazy. We'll talk about it a lot more tomorrow. I had a text, why isn't Baylor getting credit? That's a great point, and I've got some numbers that we'll talk about that as well with Dave Aranda. I wonder if Lincoln Riley sees him in his sleep. Because Dave Aranda defenses have dominated Oklahoma offenses for three straight years.
The good news is he
years.
Might get hired away.
Yeah. Back to LSU. Here we come, SEC. Yay. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.